Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Dean, we got a good one today.
We do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Our friends at Intel, they keep coming through with the great guests.
Yes. Yes.
Much appreciate it.
They're good at doing that.
Yeah. Yes. The mind share.
They got subject matter experts like nobody knows.
Exactly. Today, it's David Allen, who is their U.S. Director of Distribution.
Yes.
He's going to cover a nice wide range of interesting topics for us today. We're going to get into a term called siliconomy.
Ooh, siliconomy. Yes.
I like it.
I like it.
I want to know more about it, what it means. We're going to talk about the reticence to adopt AI solutions.
Nice.
Because we talk, again, as we have to do, we got to talk AI.
We do.
And
we
obviously with Intel, you've really got to talk AI because they're powering AI.
Absolutely. At this point.
And we're going to get into some next gen solutions. We just talked, with Michelle last week about, the next gen customer.
This is true.
Now we need to talk about what is the next gen.
What are some
gen
of the solutions that are going to fuel those next?
Going to appease those next gen of customers.
Got it. Yeah.
All that plus our usual value to the VAR. What's tech connecting with us? It's time to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected. Connected.
All right, as I mentioned, our guest today is David Allen. He is the U.S. Director of Distribution for Intel, and we are more than grateful to have him on the show. So, David, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Hey, great to be here, guys. John, Dean, great to spend time with you and with your partners. So, as you mentioned, I run U.S. Distribution for Intel. This year, actually, this past year, in 2023, I celebrated my 30-year anniversary with Intel. So that means I joined Intel back in 1993. So if you pause for a minute and you try to remember what was going on in 1993, I really can't remember a damn thing. And I was thinking today as well, next year, 2025, would be my 40-year anniversary in the industry. So like a lot of people in the industry, I started out selling retail, selling, as I recall, Apple IIcs, IBM PC Juniors, Apple Macintoshes out of a retail store. I'm based just north of Toronto. So, starting there. And then from there, made some great connections, made my way into the industry once I graduated with my business degree. I've worked for Microsoft. I worked for Aldus, worked for Apple for a spell as well, and then joined Intel in 93. Running distribution or the Canadian arm of the distribution side, then migrated. I think I missed a memo and got promoted to manager around 1998. And I've continued to be managing distribution for Intel in one way or the other since then. And again, at times it's been just US, at times it's been North American. At times I've been managing pole to pole. So for a stint there, I had distribution as well in Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, Latin America, which is a whole different spell as well on top of our North American business. So it's been a wild ride, but that's sort of my story, 30 years at Intel. And as you can imagine, guys, I've seen a few things change over the years.
Just a little bit.
Yep.
And yet again, breadth of experience here.
Yes.
From the early days, if you will. What were we
doing
in 93?
He's got what the kids call street cred.
Street
cred. Yeah. 93, I was trying to pass early calculus or something, maybe, I guess,
Oh, man. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Navigating the latter years of high school. Yeah,
so absolutely.
Definitely wasn't thinking about the future of technology, that's for sure.
No, or siliconomy.
Yeah, or yes, sir. All right. Well, then let's get into these conversations because I think we got some really cool topics to talk about. Mm. And and again, you mentioned your the time you've been in the industry and you've seen a lot of these tech waves.
Yeah.
And
right.
the tech waves they come pretty fast and furious. They bring a lot of changes,
mm-hmm.
a lot of innovation, a lot
Hype
of stuff
curve,
happens.
Yes, yeah. yes.
Very yeah. quickly ebb and flows. But Intel, they've always been at pretty much the forefront of these waves. And now we're in the AI one.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big one that everyone's talking about right now, obviously. So let's talk about AI because there's a lot of hype around it. And to say the least, you can't go anywhere without seeing something about AI,
mm-hmm.
including
it's
our
everywhere.
Podcast. Yeah.
It's everywhere. Yeah.
So help us separate the hype from the facts here. Is this really going somewhere? Or is everyone just kind of jumping on the bandwagon right now and we'll sort it out later?
So let's sort of look back over the last 30 years, and there's been what I would deem to be multiple inflection points in the industry that we have collectively seen. And the ones that stand out are the ones that have lasting impact. And you can go back, and through the 80s and the 90s, it was all about, you know, networking. And, you know, big push then on, remember, Novell NetWare and all these other variations, Token Ring and Banyan and all those solutions that some of us who are too old can still remember. Yeah, but that spurred, you know, the whole connectivity angle. So when you look at our industry, the first part of our industry was really about sort of getting connected. And that was, you know, the 80s and 90s that spurred things on. Then as we came into the 2000s, then that's when you started to see the explosion of the internet and then the explosion of everything becoming digital. And that really has been, you know, the last 20 years or so. And we saw the rise of the internet. We saw the rise of mobility. We've seen the rise of cloud. I would say that every one of those are inflection points. And every one of them is still impacting and affecting each of us today. So they were not flashes in the pan. I would view what is happening with artificial intelligence to be equal to or greater than all of those because of the fact that it's going to impact literally every aspect of our lives. Because it's not just one disparate technology. It's a technology that is then defined and then implemented across almost anything that impacts us on a day-to-day basis, whether it be in our retail shopping, in our jobs, in our healthcare, in our entertainment choices. We've already seen AI start to have impact there. When Netflix suggests to you what you should be watching on Friday night, Dean, you know, that's AI at work. So start to see that approach now coming through in literally every aspect of your life. And we've heard a lot of the buzz about applications that'll be coming down the pipe, maybe here today, that can do things that are very rote and automatic, responding to an email, creating a PowerPoint presentation out of a Word email, and things like that. Well, those things are here today, right? And they're only going to get better as we go on. So when I view what the potential for AI is, I really do view this as being game-changing on so many fronts. And again, it's also going to have impact on the economy as well. Because when you look across the U.S. today, you probably have about 100,000 startups that are focused in one way or the other on AI. 100,000. Now, clearly a lot of them are going to fail. A lot will get consolidated, but a lot of those solutions and technologies will find their way to market and have impact on people. And because this is, it's not just in one segment or one area. It really is spanning so many different aspects of our day-to-day lives. That's why AI is not a flash in the pan. That's why it will have impact.
I would agree with that. I mean, when you think about it, and to me, and we've talked about this, part of where we are in this whole, and I love the fact, David, that you kind of went through the kind of the genesis and how we get here and just right. The arc, right, of this technology. And what happened recently was this, what I would call the craze of an LLM. Like when they released ChatGPT, so AI had been happening.
Right.
It wasn't something that all of a sudden 100 million people within the first weeks of introducing that to the wild could now interface with it and have it interface back in a very human way. And that's like spooked everybody. It's like, whoa, what's going on here?
Oh, no, this is too fast.
Yeah. But you know, still, and then there's certain, you know, economic forces. I mean, I agree with everything that David said, but you think about it, you know, like the labor challenges that we have here in North America and just the efficiencies that AI can bring to bear. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are things that are moving it to the forefront of why? Well, because we have labor shortages. There's a need for better business intelligence out there, right?
Right.
There's a need to manipulate these mounds of data that we've been able to accumulate now through everything that David just said. You know, the walk up to where we are today, with the network, everything's connected now. Great. Oh, now we have the internet. Okay, now we can get to the information anywhere. Okay,
now we can take it anywhere.
Mounds of data, but we need to start making sense of it and apply in our world. Back out on the edge, you know, apply some business intelligence to that, right, David? I mean, there's these other factors that are kind of going into AI and why it's having such a run right now.
And you're right, Dean. Everyone's trying to figure this out. This really did start with the ChatGPT wave about a year or so ago, and it just exploded from there. And it looks like everyone wants to get on the wave, even though not everyone's quite sure what they're going to do yet. And when we speak to partners across the country, everyone sort of nods, says, yeah, I get AI. How do I get started? right? And that's because what they're trying to figure out is how do they translate this amazing technology? And it doesn't need to be large language models that create Gen AI. A lot of times the simplest solutions are simple machine vision type solutions that can scan an assembly line for defects, defects in manufacturing, defects in the eggs as they roll through to be packaged. Something as simple as that. Machine vision is, I think, the easy entry doorway into AI type solutions for many of the partners in today's environment. Because if you are servicing anybody in an industrial or even in a retail space, and you look at some of the solutions that Blue Star has, you know, where you're partnering with some of the independent software vendors like Wait Time, where they have great solutions that use camera sensing technology software to tell people, okay, this lineup is going to be 15 minutes long, or at the DMV an hour and a half, but that's a different story. But you get the whole concept of that technology, that solution is there and it can be deployed. So I think that's an easier way to get started. And then from there, you start to go up the ladder as to, do you need to go into larger language models where you're trying to create something new? And that's what generative AI is. So it really does come back down to what's that first step for partners? And that's where absolutely we look to partner with Blue Star to try and translate this into something that's tangible, meaningful, simple to understand, easy to deploy, a real business solution.
I love the fact that he kind of leaned in a little bit there on the machine vision, because I would agree with that. You know, when you think about opportunities, because we get asked the same question that David's getting asked over at Intel, you know, our partners are coming to us and saying, okay, the exact same thing.
Right.
Okay, there's all kinds of opportunity out there, and we'll get into to how we're going to help them with that. But, you know, where do we start, or where are some of the short-term, you know, solutions that are out there today that can be implemented that leverage AI? And we're seeing a lot on the machine vision. He referenced Wait Time. There's Pather AI. There's a number of other ones, MeldTX, that we're working with and that Intel has brought to the table. These are great companies that have wonderful solutions that can do what he was just mentioning, you know, theft deterrence in retail. Or so how wonderful is it to use the existing camera systems that are in a retail space, apply this AI solution, Pather AI in this particular instance, that can detect, you know, behavior that's a little odd, and then send a message to management at the store level saying, hey, you got, you know, this, whatever, this person over here has this type of behavior that could be suspect. So, I mean, this is the type of technology that's really fascinating, and utilizing machine vision to be able to enable some of those things.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I think we're the reason why we keep saying the hype, and people keep thinking like, oh, is this just being hyped and it's out of control, is because unfortunately, when something like this does happen, everyone does try to figure out how they can jump on board and do something with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Something is like, you know, simple, like, you know, when I log into our podcast platform, there's a thing that says, hey, we got AI, we can write your description of your episode now. Like,
there you go.
All right, well, that would be fine if it was someone who had nothing to do with the podcast and just needed it written without watching it, fine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I write it because I literally live it and do it. So I can do that part myself. So I think it's like, you know, everything is, we're trying to shove AI into everything right now. Mm. And everyone's trying to shove AI in some way and say, we got AI.
I see.
But you got to make it meaningful in some way.
This is true.
And I think that's a big part of what we're trying to do in our ecosphere and in the channel and our companies is like, how do we separate the hype from the meaning? To your point, both of your point, give our partners that answer when they come to us and say, hey, I get it. I know it's there, but what do I do and where do I start? Mm. So to that end, that kind of leads into our next talking point here. Oh, and by the way, you know, tell me more about the Siliconomy part of things, because I know that was kind of something, the connecting piece from your company onto this AI hype. But what is that term and what does it mean?
Yeah, sure. It's a great question there, John. So the term Siliconomy puts together obviously two words, silicon and economy. And it's a phrase that was coined by our CEO, Pat Gelsinger, to really describe the absolutely critical nature of silicon in today's global economy. And if you doubt that for a second, I would ask you to harken back to the pandemic, say about two, three years ago, when how many things were in shortage because there was one or two semiconductor parts lacking, right? It was in cars, it was in televisions, it was in refrigerators, all because that there wasn't enough capacity to build that one resistor, that one transistor, that one subassembly that depended on silicon. When you take a look around the globe today, silicon is about a $500 billion industry. We expect by the end of this decade, it will go to $1 trillion. So you can basically start to, you know, to look at the impact of silicon on the global economy, and the global economy does not run without semiconductors and silicon. So that's why from an Intel point of view, we absolutely view this as critical. We also view it now, you can also look upon it, and you look at some of the news headlines of the last few weeks, last few months, with the CHIPS Act and the investments that the U.S. is making in reshoring the manufacturing of silicon. At this point, about 80% of the world's semiconductors are manufactured in one region, in Asia. They specialized on it, and they've done a fantastic job. But when you look upon that in terms of national security, of economic security, that's not good. So that's why the intent is, and you've seen announcements from Intel, we've announced that we're building, not too far from you folks, over near Columbus with Ohio One, our first fabrication plant in the Midwest. So that's being built right now and we're churning out semiconductors in a couple of years. Already, we have plants in New Mexico, in Oregon, in California, in Oregon. So that's our part to try and basically balance the world's semiconductor supply chain to be much more resilient and much more geographically diverse. Some being built in Asia, some being built in the Americas, some being built in Europe, because the critical nature of semiconductors is absolutely an inherent factor in the success of the global economy going forward. Hence the term, the siliconomy.
That's great. And of course, the world that we live in is dependent upon that.
Yeah.
I mean,
it powers everything we do.
I don't even want to know what the CAGR is on something that's going to go from 500 billion to a trillion in 6 years, I guess. That's pretty robust. But again, getting back to the fact that, you know, so much of what we do and depend on in the world that we are in,
right,
living on the edge, if you will, and edge type of solutions, it's going to be driven by this, by the concepts that David just delineated.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, when we're going out there and we're talking about these new edge solutions, we're talking about AI in the channel, we're getting into this with our partners, with our customers, their customers. Mm. But obviously, there's skepticism around all this. You know, like with any tech wave, again, you've seen enough of them. There's always this point where there's a group of people who just cross their arms and go, I'll wait and see. I'm not sure about this. I'll sit back and I'll see what's happening and then I'll, you know, figure out what I want to
deal with
do
it later.
When I get there. Yeah. I kind of feel like I know the answer to this, but what is your reaction to that when people take that kind of like, we'll wait and see attitude?
This is coming so fast and so furious, and there's so many variations and so many businesses being impacted. I just worry that when you get left behind on this one, you're going to be usurped in the marketplace. Solution providers are there to do that, to provide solutions. And if you step back on something like this, there's enough people and companies and motivated individuals out there who are viewing this as an opportunity. And we always there's a saying at Intel, market segment share is won or lost in transitions and inflection points. Well, this is a pretty darn big transition and inflection point that we're about to go through. So if a partner doesn't step up to understand what their customers want and need from a business aspect, and then go off and find the AI solutions that can help them in their business, not only is that solution provider in their business at risk, well, so is their customers. Because they're not being true to their customer and bringing them and holding their hand into this brave new world. Yeah, it's scary, and it is the wild, wild west, but pulling an ostrich and sticking your head in the sand is not a solution here. So that's why, you know, from an Intel point of view, we're doing everything we can to educate our partner base on what AI is and what AI isn't. And that's where it comes back down to. AI is not just, you know, Gen AI. It's the simple things that we've been talking about, in machine vision being a great example of that. And in educating about AI, that a lot of the effort goes into getting your data ready, then you train on it, and then you have the inference of that data. That's what AI is. It's just really, really good predictive technology, you know, based on being trained from a very good data set. At the end of the day, that's what AI is. So the time you spend on training and getting your data clean makes for a very good inference type model. But I think that at the end of the day, for example, here's a good example. How do I stay up to date on this? There's a feed, a really good email feed called the Rundown AI. And it hits my inbox every morning and I read through it. And I'm always just blown away by each day the announcements, the new technologies, and the new software solutions coming to market, incorporating some aspect of AI that I never even thought of that you'd be looking to put AI into. So I hope that sort of answers the question there, John, but it's a great opportunity.
But it's understandable, right? The human nature around something like this is, maybe right. I'll wait a little
bit. Again, as with everything.
See how this pans out. I think David's hit the nail on the head. You're going to be usurped. You're going to be passed by. But here's the good news, because, you know, I understand that, you know, obviously there's going to be a little bit of anxiety kind of moving into this space. And if you're a reseller, and as David mentioned, is it 100,000, I guess, AI companies that are out? How in the world do you filter that, you know, if you're starting to do that? And that's why I love what the symbiotic nature of Intel and Blue Star. So let me paint a picture here. Intel already has certain programs around helping, you know, solution providers in this space. They have what are called market ready solutions. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, Blue Star has in a box solutions, very similar. Yeah. Intel has a program called Intel Accelerated, where software providers can excel, you know, get their solutions vetted, for lack of a better term, on their silicone. Right. And now that has certain advantages on security and all kinds of things like that. Blue Star is enabling our Tech Connect community of ISVs through what we're calling Blue Star vetted solutions. So there's this synergy that we've been working on together. And now the go-to-market strategy is going to be, when you come to Blue Star, you know, as a partner, you are going to see Intel accelerated solutions that help you navigate the world of what is a proper vetted solution. You know, as I put my reseller hat on, I think it would be comforting to be able to go to an entity, you know, and see that, oh, it's Intel accelerated, it's Blue Star validated. Okay, this must be serious. This must be a serious machine vision solution in warehousing.
You can feel pretty confident about it.
As opposed to just Googling, you know, machine vision in warehouse. I don't even want to know the thousands of responses that are going to come up. I mean, you know, you tour, but if you walk these shows, you know, AI is everywhere. And how in the world do you make those decisions? So we are making a very intentional effort with the partnership of Intel of developing these solutions on the edge that can enable those partners and give them confidence out there. And so hopefully one of those barriers that we're breaking down is that wait and see attitude.
Yeah,
No, don't wait and see. We have these solutions. They're here today. They've been vetted. Go out into the marketplace with them. Yeah.
Like, again, we appreciate the skepticism. I understand it.
Yeah.
But
we understand it. We're trying to mitigate it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. That's what we're all here for, is to make sure that you can safely push that aside and at least know there are people that are giving you solutions that have been vetted, that are ready to go and do what you and your partners and your customers want them to do without having to take mitigating that risk factor.
Yeah.
You know, Justin from Intel, when we talked to him last year.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing. Talking about the idea of taking the risk out of emerging technologies.
Yep.
And that happens when you have this ecosphere that's doing the homework for you so that you can feel pretty confident when you go to market then after.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, so then, David, you know, we talk a lot about on this show about the next generation of the reseller, the channel. I just mentioned we had a podcast last week. We were talking about the next generation of the customer and what their expectations are.
Right.
Business models, what the next gen of that is. And there's a lot of solutions around that, a lot of stuff that we're starting to go out and play with and build an environment and an ecosphere around, like PDU, you know, the programming digital advertising, EV charging stations, all that kind of stuff starts coming into play when you start, you know, moving forward with these emerging solutions. But from your vantage point, what else is changing the way that our channel goes to market now? You know, what's going to move us into the future from where we currently are to get to where the next gen customer, reseller, channel, business model, all that needs to go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're clearly seeing an evolution of business models. And I think this has been in flight for quite a while now, but it's absolutely accelerating. And I think part of the rationale here is the new technologies coming to market. So I think everyone has to take a good solid look at the business model. For years, so the first, you know, if you take a look at our industry and you say, okay, it's been around for 50, you know, 60 years, whatever, for the first, you know, 30 to 40 years of that, it was selling point products, right? It was selling that RFID scanner or that label printer and so on. But in the last 10 years especially, we've seen that migrate into much more of a focus on business outcomes and on solutions, and now starting to see it move more into oftentimes as a service. And I think that's been absolutely one of those key, again, it's an inflection point, a very subtle one in terms of the way that people are going to market now and what companies and customers are quite comfortable looking for. Is that at the end of the day, less and less they're concerned about the products or the technologies. Is it delivering that business outcome? So that's why we love to partner with you guys and with your partners on outcome-based selling, on value-based selling. That is, it gets beyond the speeds, the feeds. It does include some information on the underlying technology, but at the end of the day, it's there to deliver that outcome that someone is willing to pay for. Because without that, there's no use doing all this. So I think being ready for innovation, being ready for models that are going to evolve and change. And, you know, we've seen a lot of research recently. The Channel Company, a great partner of ours, presented some recent market research. And we knew that there'd been a move towards the recurring revenue models as a service. We were surprised by how quickly it is moving towards that degree. And that anyone with a long-term view understands they absolutely need to incorporate that into their models. So I think it's a combination of what are the outcomes, what are those business solutions you're trying to craft, and then how are you going to present that and bring that to your customer base? Is it on the historical model of that buy and sell, or is it now going to be revised into more of a subscription model? And annual recurring revenue models are a very, very good thing to have as part of your overall P&L. Because on day one of a month, there's money in the bank, you know, from those. So it's really interesting. We've been watching this with fascination and helping to facilitate that via our partnerships with folks like Blue Star and your partners.
We talk about it all the time, right? Like, what is necessary for the next gen of these sellers, and how is the channel morphing and things of that nature? You know, I mean, when you step back and think about it, look, you know, resellers, they have their core business, right? And they're not going to walk away from the core of their business, whether they're an MSP.
And we're not
today,
asking them to.
No,
either.
No, no. Yeah. Or an SI or a VAR in our world. You know, that's the core. But, you know, moving forward, you have to look at what we call those adjacent and then emerging technologies, yep. Right? And come up with a plan around that in order to enable that type of thing. And it does take a slightly different disposition, as David referred to already. You know, kind of how do you get into outcome-based selling? That's a different selling method, if you will, than just the traditional, oh, well, here's my box, and here are the features and benefits of that box, and right. Do you want one, and how many,
right.
You know, right, type of a thing. That's gone, right? And so we have been working with, for example, with Intel. They have a wonderful sales training program called ADS, and we've incorporated it. We've trained our sales team on it. We're now enabling it moving forward, where we're going to be able to provide that to our customer base who wants to be trained and, well, okay, how do I get my sales team to start thinking about outcome-based selling, right? And then through that, you can enable these solutions that we're bringing to market. So there is a lot changing out there, but the good news is that we've got some tool sets and some operations in place like that to help enable our partners.
Yeah,
that, you
I agree.
You know, I think a lot of times where this stuff comes... Oh, David, do you have somebody over there?
I was going to say, let me just jump in for a second here, John. Dean, thank you for mentioning the ADS model.
Mm-hmm.
And just to clarify this for everybody, ADS, an acronym, stands for Assess, Discover, Design, and Scale. And it really breaks down that whole selling process into those four distinct categories. And once you go through that, we've gotten such top marks from everybody in the industry that we've helped train and deliver this out to. And we're thrilled to actually be partnering with Blue Star to bring that out to your customer base. So as part of the Sales Academy offerings, look for more on the ADS offerings. This really does make a difference and helps to arm our partners and their sales forces for the new world order that we're going into.
Bingo. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think... There's an attitude sometimes of, well, I have customers and I know my customers and they're not ready for X.
Mm.
That's fine that you understand that, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't be talking about X.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that you have to go in with an expectation of like, hey, I understand my customers are going to need AI solutions or EV charging stations, this edge technologies, all these new and innovative technologies. You may know that there is a need for that and there's a demand for that will be occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, again, you're looking at your customer and like, yeah, they're not ready, so I'm not going to talk about it just yet. I don't want to try to push this on them. It's not being pushy. It's about having those conversations
mm-hmm.
earlier than later. Because again, you don't want to be in the situation of getting left behind, like we were talking about earlier, but you also don't want to be in a situation of where when someone decides we need this yesterday, who am I going to call? And they're finding the first person they can find to come after. What if you were that first person?
Mm-hmm.
Because you've already been talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
You've already been asking over the years, like, hey, what are your thoughts on this? Have you thought about that?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to address this when this comes down the pike? All these kind of these development of conversations that should be happening to get people prepared for these situations. Now, granted, mm-hmm. hey, if you start having these conversations and it leads you to a deal sooner or later, awesome. But there's no reason not to start talking about these things right now, asking those, are you ready for questions? Have you thought about questions? What happens if questions? And get them thinking about it. Get the, you know, the gears churning within their system.
Absolutely. And again, it speaks to the fact that the modern solution integrator, SI, or even MSPs, you know, I mean, they built businesses on the as a service. So I'm glad you referred to the channel company study. I did read that. What a great study. Really eye-opening in a lot of ways. As David just mentioned, I mean, we've heard a lot about the as a service, right? And we've been preaching it for years, and there's been a move to that. It has been a little bit more rapid here recently than not. And that's a good sign in the sense that resellers are and technologists and SIs are understanding the value of now doing not only the recurring revenue model, but the stickiness that brings to it. And then you become that trusted advisor. Now you can leverage your partnership ecosystem, which is what you should be doing. And these are all the things that we're working to enable, you know, on that front.
Right.
But you really have to be there, right?
Yeah.
As I said with Michelle the last week, you can't be the one trick pony anymore. So as you know that, you have to move, and you either do or you don't, and you're not going to be around for a while, right?
Yeah. So if you don't, you get left behind.
You get left behind.
Even faster.
That's right. That's right.
So.
That's right.
All right. Well, hey, this has been some good stuff. We're going to talk more in a moment about our Tech Connect program that you hinted at earlier.
Yes.
And how Intel's helping us amplify and power that to the next level to keep bringing in more partners into our channel.
Fair.
But first, as always, I want to thank all of our sponsors and partners here on the Tech Connect podcast, including Intel.
Including Intel.
Sponsors
right.
our Tech Connect program, sponsors the podcast, lends us brilliant people like David and their partners to come on and talk about some amazing solutions that mm-hmm. are driving the channel forward. So we appreciate you. And as always, hey, if you like the show, if you're an avid listener, or maybe this is your first episode, give us a little bit of feedback.
Yes.
Leave us a comment.
Yes.
Give us a review. Mm-hmm. Hit like. Share it with someone else in your world that may be interested in this particular conversation. And of course, as always, tell us what you want to hear about on the show.
That's right. Yeah.
Drop us a suggestion. We want to hear from you. We want to know what you want to hear about. Did you hear something that David mentioned today that you'd like us to dig a little further into?
Yep.
Happy to do that. We'll drag him back on, or we'll find someone else that can come on and
better yet,
out.
You'll get a t-shirt out of it.
That's right.
You'll get a Tech Connect t-shirt out of it. There you go.
You send us an idea, we send you a t-shirt. It's that simple. Even if we don't use the idea, we'll still send you a
t-shirt just for taking
the time to even do it. So as always, you can go to the show notes. You'll find a link to drop those ideas directly to us. You can also find us on LinkedIn at any time. There's always posts about our episodes each week. Feel free to leave comments there or reach out to us directly by email, techconnect@bluestarinc.com. All right, let's wrap things up as always, starting with our value to the VAR. Like I teased a minute ago, we have this Tech Connect program. It's our ecosystem that's designed to help integrators, vendors, collaborate mm-hmm. on these big full solutions mm-hmm. for interesting and unique industry problems by mm-hmm. bringing in software companies mm-hmm. that can help us with that. Because we've learned now that, like,
all this stuff needs software.
Hardware itself isn't going to do anything. You know,
That's right.
It's nice.
Yeah.
You know, you pick up your phone and it's great, but if you don't have apps on it, it doesn't really do much for you.
Yeah.
So all this cool stuff that we're selling, you got to have that software aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
So David, how's Intel helping us out with that? Because you guys have been really bringing the fire, if you will, to the program and to all these software companies. How are you helping us take that to the next level?
John, you hit the nail on the head when you said none of this stuff works without software. Intel, everyone thinks of us as a hardware company. It's easy to forget that we have about 17,000 software engineers on staff. A lot of times that's to make the silicon work, but also then to make sure to optimize other software vendors' products with our hardware. And I would say we've doubled down on that effort in the last while and put a lot more business focus on that. What was interesting, so Pat Gelsinger joined Intel as an 18-year-old back in the 1980s as an intern, and literally rose up through the ranks And basically, he was one of the brains behind, in fact, the driving force behind the 486 processor. At one point, as you know, Pat left Intel, and he went off into EMC, and then was CEO at VMware for a while there, before coming back to Intel 3 years ago. So Pat knows how to run a software company. And as he came back, that was one of his orders to the team was build up our software capabilities. We can do so much more there. So that's a twofold focus. Number one, you're going to see more software come out of Intel that we'll bring to market. And we had a lot of stuff percolating that we're just starting to bring to market now. So that's one thrust. The other, which can go even faster, is for us to act as an incubator and to then find a lot of these disparate little shops out there, these software vendors who their entire focus is writing great code to deliver this solution. Well, we bring it in, we optimize their code to run an Intel architecture. And that's what we've been doing for decades, and we're doing even more of that now. So we do that with some of these vendors, like you mentioned a couple of them there already, like Pather, like WaitTime, like Epic.io, and so on like that. And there's a whole bunch more in the hopper that we're going to be bringing to market. So this, again, fits the bill. It's optimized to run an Intel. It's vetted, so you know it's going to work properly. And then we bring it to market through partners like Bluestar, who you put together the other pieces of the puzzle. At the end of the day, we want to drive demand for Intel-based technologies. So if it's driving cloud-based usage of Intel instances, or it's going to run on an AI PC with an Intel CPU in front of it, that's exactly what we're driving. But that's our role here, and you're going to see more and more real-world solutions independent software vendor solutions coming to market through you guys. We're excited about that.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, as we talked about, how do you have a Siliconomy that, right? If we all agree there is a Siliconomy, which there is, right. It's all running on silicon. I mean, come on, you have to enable that, right? And in the path to doing that is exactly what David just mentioned. You know, there's this ecosystem. Think of the power. I'll just go back to it. The power of being able as a reseller to go into the marketplace with something that's already been vetted by Intel, right. Vetted by Blue Star. I mean, these are powerful forces behind this stuff. It's not, we're not talking, this is top shelf type of stuff, right? Yeah. I mean, this is like, you can go to market to it with confidence. So a lot of good stuff that's happening. And as David mentioned, you know, it's interesting that Intel's, you know, play in the software world, and we're really excited about it. They're getting into some platform-based technologies where, you know, we'll be able to leverage the power of Intel. I know you said 17,000 software folks, and I know they're not all just writing code for, you know, AI and stuff like that. But man, that's a lot of, you know, there's just a lot of resources that and engineering and that can be used in proof of concepts and the incubator. I love the fact that he brought that up. I mean, we're working collaboratively on innovation labs and things of that nature to try to figure out ways to enable these solutions. So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff happening there.
Yeah. And I can tell you, as someone on the marketing side of things that does a lot of end user marketing, that's usually tied to a lot of these software companies that we've brought into our ecosphere and are working with. And even like when we do some of these podcast episodes with some of Intel's software partners that they've brought to our attention.
Yep.
This is the stuff that gets people excited.
Oh yeah,
this
absolutely.
Is the stuff that that's the stuff that your end users are actually going to find interesting and exciting. No slight to our amazing vendor partners. No slight to the awesome hardware.
Sure.
And how amazing
that stuff's getting. No slight to the core at all.
Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But again, like I said, you know, when you get your new device, whether it's a phone, whether it's a tablet, you know, laptop, whatever it is. You're not excited about the thing itself. You might be happy, like, all right, this thing is going to be faster and new battery life.
Yep.
You're excited about all the stuff that's going to be on it. And it's the same way with these software solutions. When you can go out and be like, hey, I'm not here to sell you a printer and a barcode scanner. I'm here to sell you a printer, a barcode scanner, and this amazing piece of software is going to solve this very specific niche problem of you, your business, your industry that no one has ever figured out a way to solve before. Doesn't that sound amazing to you? That's the part that they're going to stop and say, all right.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
We'll get to the barcode scanner and the printer later. That sounds great. Tell me more about that software.
Yeah, right.
This is the stuff that if you have this kind of partnerships, if you're paying attention to this stuff, if you're developing your ecosystem around that and letting us and Intel help you do that, it's only going to make these end user conversations and you trying to go out there and win business that much more exciting.
There you go. Absolutely.
So it's the good stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Good stuff.
All right. Well, hey, let's wrap up as always with our favorite segment of each week, What's Tech Connecting with Us? This is where we have to talk about something in the world of tech, business, science, innovation, or just something random we feel like having a conversation about today. So, David, I'll let you kick it off here. What's Tech Connecting with you right now?
So I listened in last week, and John, I heard you talk about your AirPod Pros Generation 2. Heard that? Yep, they're not bad. I go in a slightly different direction, so I'll show you a couple of things here. So I've been a Bose man for many years. So, I swear by a couple of things here. I swear by my Bose, QC2s here or QC Ultras. These are the in-ear version. In my view, these have the best noise canceling on the marketplace. So I always travel with this. The longer trips, I sort of go with the over-ear. So the Bose QC45s. These are, you put these on in your own world. Now, part of the challenge, though, when you're flying, and every once in a while you don't want to work, you want to watch the movie, right? But you still got to plug in a set of headphones into their little audio jacks, which is so 1994.
Oh, yeah.
I just can't believe it.
Exactly.
So I found this for our friends at Amazon. Here's one. It's a wireless audio transmitter for Bluetooth. So you plug this into the audio jack on the airplane back seat, and then you can pair up to two different types of Bluetooth headsets with that. So you and your traveling partner can both watch the same movie at the same time. So I was pretty excited to find that, and works wonderfully. So that's one thing that I'm excited about. The other thing I'm really excited about this year, and I want to see you guys having AI PCs on your desktop later on this year, because that's one of the new innovations coming from Intel, and they're just coming to market now. So that's going to be exciting too.
I didn't know when they were coming to market. That's awesome. So soon or they're out now?
Yeah. No. Major manufacturers already starting to ship Intel Core Ultra-based systems. This is the 14th generation of the Core CPU for mobile, for notebooks, and now starting to make their way into market as we speak. So take a look at your usual manufacturers, but it's pretty exciting to see these. And these are systems, again, they've got the CPU, they've got the GPU, and the neural processing unit in there. So that code that I was talking about that was optimized, it's going to run fantastic on AI PCs. So look for those starting now.
That's Sweet. Pretty cool. Yeah, I like it. Stuff. I like it a lot.
All right, Dean, what's Tech
Connecting? Well, I'm going to kind of continue with not the headphones there, but my Tech Connecting is a study that was done around listening to live music. So, right, I've got a musical past.
Of course. Yeah.
I was a musician, played lots of gigs.
It's in your DNA.
Live, yes. So the question is, do you listen to live albums, by the way?
I love a good live album.
David, do you like good live albums, like whatever?
Of course. There you go. Comes Alive.
There you go. Yeah. Okay, but your emotional response to that is probably not as good as when it was actually live.
Well, so
here's the study. Hearing live music triggers more brain activity in regions responsible for processing emotions than recordings of that same song. So they ran an interesting experiment at the University of Zurich, where they had a pianist live, and then they hooked up 27 people to MRI machines, and they did live music. Judged how the amygdala reacted to that, which is the emotional part of your brain, and then played the exact, and by the way, enabled the pianist to kind of lean into the emotion. If they saw there was a lot of activity around that, the pianist would get a little bit more pronounced with the music and things of that nature, and then compared that to just a recording of the exact same thing, like not being in the live experience, and it didn't have the same effect. So if you ever felt like you went to a concert and it's like just the emotional part around that, like, oh my gosh, that was so cool. Yes, you can buy the CD. Well, you can stream it later, but you're not going to have that. You don't have the same emotional connection to it. Even though these live albums are great, believe you me, my favorite my favorite album of all time is Exit Stage Left by Rush, which is live.
Right.
So I get it. But if you have that feeling that nothing beats live, well, here's a study that proves that yes, indeed, you are emotionally more attached during a live event.
Now we just need to figure out how to get that emotion into.
Ooh, there you go.
Recording.
Ah,
because I've officially reached the point in my life where I feel like I'm too old to go to most concerts. I don't have the stamina.
Not the stamina, nor can you afford it.
I mean, there's that too.
Who
yes.
can go see Taylor Swift for crying
Beyonce
out loud?
Beyonce or anything.
Oh,
yeah, exactly.
My Lord. Yeah.
That's a very good point. All right, good stuff.
So what's Tech Connecting with you then?
So I'll step back a little bit. Maybe David, next time you're on a plane, if you're looking for something interesting to watch, I've got a TV recommendation you here.
Yes.
Mostly because
David, if you didn't know, John is quite the guru
I'm the junkie of streaming shows and movies. Yes. And because I forgot I ran out of my normal Tech Connecting list with this one. So I'm like, all right, I'll just make a recommendation of a show I just finished watching a second season of. And this is called Extraordinary. It's on Hulu.
Oh.
It's a British comedy. And the simple premise of it, simple but also like hilariously, fun that they do with it, is what if superpowers, everybody in the world essentially has superpowers.
Okay.
But they're all or mostly very mundane and kind of dumb. And sometimes
the superpowers themselves.
Yeah, not even very practical. So basically, it imagines a world where essentially everybody, when they become an adult, can get a superpower of some sort.
Okay.
They just happen to sprout a superpower of some sort. And so, sure, there's some folks out there that can fly or are super strong or maybe have super speed. But most people get weird, bizarre stuff.
Like
a guy who is manning a mini restaurant, like a mini tiny restaurant with shrunken people. And his job is to stand outside and boop you on the nose and make you shrink so that you can go into the tiny restaurant.
Oh, I see. I got you.
Or maybe somebody who can, pass their body, partially through items, but only partial,
Through. Yeah.
Exactly. So very simple, mundane stuff and how people would do with those. So now imagine that world, but you are someone who is in your early 20s and doesn't get a superpower. You're one of the rare few that doesn't reason. Mm-hmm. That is the premise of this show. And the character you follow, her name is Jen. She is in her early 20s, does not have her power, is trying to figure out how she can get there. Her best friend, Carrie, who lives with her, her weird power is she can channel the dead. And she works for a law firm who basically has her channel the dead, which she does great with this performance. The actress who does is awesome about doing this and can channel the dead in order to, settle legal disputes.
Or, I see. Yes.
Give some insights or whatever on stuff is necessary. And again, it is a goofball, sometimes a little not raunchy, but, definitely mature kind of show.
Yeah.
And dealing with 20 somethings that, again, in a world where if everyone had some random superpower, there probably honestly wouldn't be an Avengers squad or a Justice League necessarily.
That's right. That's right.
People aren't out saving the world. They're just still trying to get by and have some kind of
making people
power.
Shrink to get into the diner. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And finding goofy ways to use it. So highly
What's
recommend
it called again?
It's called Extraordinary.
Extraordinary.
Two seasons in. They just released the second season a couple weeks ago. They're like 8 episodes long each, maybe like half hour, 40-minute shows.
I like it.
Fun, funny, a witty kind of exercise on the idea of superheroics and superpowers.
Love it.
And
love it. So, yeah. There you go.
All right. That is what's
your recommendation.
With us.
Yep.
It is time for us to unplug. David Allen with Intel. Thank you so much for joining
us
today. Appreciate having
Gentlemen,
you on the
thank
show.
Thank you. Yeah. Great conversation. Love the time. Thank you very much.
There you go. Until next time, uncross your arms, allow in some future tech.
Yes.
Look to the future.
Absolutely.
And go out and discover your superpower. And as always, folks, please stay connected. Tech Connect Podcast is brought to you by Elo. They have completely redesigned their iSeries 3 with Intel.
Whoa.
There's some synergy with this episode right here.
I like it.
They're adding the dependability that businesses need. These are brilliant, beautiful, and interactive displays that feature a modular design and endless versatility with sizes of 15, 17, 22, and 24 inches, a slate version, and square or wide aspect options. Every iSeries offers a 10-touch Touch Pro PCAP.
Ooh.
So that's a bit of a mouthful.
10-touch.
10-touch.
Yes.
That's handy. So if you want to just jam all your fingers on there,
there you go. No
things,
problem.
You can do it. A fanless IP54 rated design, edge-to-edge glass, and Intel's 12th generation processors for reliable enterprise-grade security. Now you can get the iSeries 3 in models that support Windows, Chrome OS Flex, and Linux. They also are compatible with Elo Z stands and the Z Series Elo Pods for self-service and point-of-sale applications.
Nice.
Learn more about the redesigned iSeries 3 by checking the link in the show notes or contacting the Blue Star Elo team. We'll